So tonight I'd like to begin with one of the classic stories in the Buddhist teachings and mythology. It's, you know, mythology and stories that really have to do with the truths and waking up. And in this one, it's about Ananda, who is the Buddha's cousin and his attendant, is one of probably his most devoted disciple. And this happened after the Buddha's death. That it was some years after the Buddha's death, there was what was called an enlightenment council, which is a gathering of all the enlightened monks. And it was something that, unfortunately, Ananda was not entitled to join in, because although he was a very wise and deep and serviceful being, he had not achieved enlightenment yet. So he was kind of not part of the invitation list. So on the eve of the council meeting, he was determined to practice vigorously all night. He was going to make it. This was his determination. So he sat up, and he wasn't going to stop until he attained his goal. And he sat up, and he tried, and he really put out. And all he really succeeded in doing was exhausting himself and feeling incredibly discouraged. So there wasn't the slightest progress in spite of his efforts. So finally it was towards dawn, and he just decided, okay, put it down. Stop trying so hard. Just let go of the striving. And so he just thought, okay, I'll just rest. And as the story goes, in the moment that he put his head on his pillow, he was enlightened. So that was his ticket. He got in. You know. The moral of the story, and really the interesting thing, is, well, what really freed him? And the understanding is that the reason it's even called realization is that we are realizing what's always and already here. We're realizing an awareness and love that's really our nature, and it's not something that is experienced by striving, by some idea that our nature is down the road and we need to grasp at it or attain something. That's not how it goes. The realization is revealed in the moments that there's a profound quality of presence, where there's no grasping onto attaining anything, even including enlightenment, and there's no resisting how it is. Awake and relaxed, in a profound way, awake and relaxed. And it's interesting for us to kind of look at in our own lives the times of real healing or transformation. For some of us, it's when we faced a really big loss, maybe in a relationship, or maybe with somebody dying or something going on in our own body. And when really was there the arising of wisdom or love? It didn't come when we were trying to control things, figure things out, when we were railing against how it was. The freedom and the awakening only arises in moments of not resisting, of just simple presence. This is the Venerable Lama Gendun Rinpoche, one of the most famous of the Tibetan called Vajra songs, and he describes happiness, which is also, you could say, freedom, the freedom of total realization. He says, happiness cannot be found through great effort and willpower, but is already there in relaxation and letting go. Don't strain yourself. There's nothing to do. Nothing to do. Nothing to force. Nothing to want. And everything happens by itself. So the question that comes up for many of us is, well, don't we need to make some effort? I mean, you know, Ananda practiced for many decades before that moment of resting wakefully and being liberated. He practiced training his mind much the way we practice, learning to notice thoughts and come back here. And that takes some effort, doesn't it? But it's described in a way that I think is important as a kind of effortless effort. That the real gist is an intention to be here. And the effort's not a doing as much as a relaxing and an undoing. There's really two qualities with this effort. And one is to notice what's going on. And it's an effort to really be awake, which is our nature, just to notice what's going on. And the second quality is allowing, having a space for it, an allowing space. So what is this allowing? What is this letting go that we keep talking about? Because it really is so basic in these teachings to keep on letting go and letting go. And you might take your fist right now and make it, like, clench your fist a little. And just tighten, tighten, tighten. And then sense, just notice what the tightness feels like. And just close your eyes and sense, okay, so what is letting go? And just explore it. Let go and sense what it is. That we recognize the clutching, and it might be our habitual tensing of our body or our mind. And letting go is a discontinuing of the clutching. It's not an added doing. It's an undoing of the tensing. We're going to explore this more, but that is the basic understanding, that our practice is not something we're further doing. For many of you, I think I've shared this some weeks ago, how Swami Satchidananda put it when somebody asked him, you know, if he had to be a Hindu to do yoga. And he said, no, you don't have to be a Hindu, just be an undo, you know. I think that's great, because it's like we're not doing something. The doing is already happening. Our conditioned self is doing a lot. We're noticing it and relaxing the grip. Does that make sense for now? We'll keep going on it, but we're relaxing the grip. So tonight we're going to explore this undoing. One possible title for tonight's talk is Resistance is Futile. That it doesn't work to tighten, it doesn't work to resist, only to undo. So it begins with, we can only undo what we're aware of. We have to notice it. You have to notice the clench before you kind of relax it, right? And so a lot of the spiritual path is this waking up to how much of a doing self we are, to get it, to register how many moments of our day we have this conditioning that we're always trying to control something. We're trying to make something happen. We're trying to stop something from happening. When it's pleasant, we're trying to get more of it. When it's unpleasant, we're trying to reduce it. So there's all this constant, if you watch yourself through the day, there's a constant movement of the body to get more comfortable, to get something, to do something, and more even the mind. It's always moving towards or away. It's always trying to figure out. It's always trying to control the world through its thoughts so that we get more of something that we want and we avoid what we don't want. Now, here's the deal. We're designed to do. I mean, activity is part of our nature, and there's nothing wrong with any of that. The suffering is that we chronically overdo. That rather than a quality of pausing and presence, our sense of who we are is so hitched to the self that has to do something more, and there's never a sense of enough. And our sense of okayness comes if we've checked enough off the list, and more often, insufficiency if we haven't met the standard. The doing self is usually a suffering self. And in this culture, it's so much amazing to me, this myth of Sisyphus, many of you know, king of Corinth, and this is in the Greek myths, where the gods, the punishment for Sisyphus was that he had to roll that boulder up the mountain, and he'd strain and stress and push and, you know, sweat it up, and then always it would roll back down. And that's our life. That's the life of the doing self. There's never, the loose ends never get tied up. It's a myth. It's a myth that they'll ever get tied up. As one Dharma teacher, Joseph Goldstein, said, if it's not one thing, it's another. Always. We're on our way. This idea of the doing self is moving through time, on our way, trying to get things done, trying to prove ourselves, trying to figure things out so things don't go wrong. And it's so familiar that we often don't see how much it's like a tight fist. And that's where I want to go tonight. It's so much like a tight fist. And when we're in the doing self, we really can't fully take in the blossoms that are around us on all the different levels. And we really can't take in another person. We cannot really open ourselves and in a silence, in a presence, just be there with someone. The doing self can't do that. And when we're in a doing self, we really can't be intimate with the life inside us because we're in a project mentality on our way somewhere else. There's no intimacy. We can see the tight fist, this kind of tight self that's really got a small world. We might read the newspaper and be concerned about stories out there, but our world, our real concerns are very, very narrow. And it's embarrassing to admit to ourselves how narrow they are, but they are. It's easier to see the fist, to see the tightness, the tight body mind, when we're when things really go wrong. But the flags of the doing self, the body is chronically tense. You know, the shoulders are usually up, and, you know, there's tightness, the gut is if you pay attention really tight. There's tension, chronic tension. The flag of the doing self is that the mind is very occupied and busy and that we're always trying to figure something out. Okay. There's a speediness. The more stress, usually the more speed, unless it's huge, huge stress, in which case we sometimes come to a grinding halt. And it's very difficult to pause. Very difficult. A story from a Kripalu, a yoga center, holistic health center in New England. They had a program for young adults and did a lot of meditating. And one point, some parents were visiting and two parents were overheard speaking. And one was saying, well, what's your son's program? What's he doing? And the other parent said, you know, I'm not sure what this meditation thing is, but at least he's not sitting around doing nothing. Little did they know, that's exactly what he was doing. And it's a major, major radical training. Can we sit around and do nothing? Get really intimate. So we begin to see the suffering of the doing self when something really heavy hits in our life. When there's a real conflict with somebody that we love, when we're facing, you know, a major divorce or loss, maybe in our job, maybe something to do with our reputation or our sense of integrity or worth or how we're looked at by others. But when something really, when life is not working out, we can begin to see just how tight and knotted we get. We see the self's reaction. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross describes stages of reaction when we really get hit by loss that are pretty archetypal, and they're really useful to remember because we can see the tight fist in them, how it forms. In the first stage, when something really difficult happens, when we're tightening against it, resisting, is a kind of denial where we just stay occupied. And for many of us, there might be an undercurrent of bad stuff happening, but there's a sense we just are busy keeping occupied. That's the kind of denial phase where we're not really facing our loneliness or our hurt or our fear. So there's this disconnect, okay? Then at the second phase, when it starts getting through, something is wrong, is anger. The second phase is that we either blame ourselves or blame others. And at each of these phases, we can get arrested, and we can spend days and decades at this phase of tight fist reaction. So either we're cut off and preoccupied, or we go into blame mode, and we can spend a long time consumed by I'm bad or you're bad. We talk about that a lot in here. That's one level of arrest. Then there's another phase we sometimes get caught in, which is Elizabeth Kubler-Ross describes as bargaining, where we're constantly figuring out, well, I'll do this and maybe that'll make that better. But there's an addiction to figuring things out. That, again, can be for decades. Frequently we get it that our figuring isn't working, that things aren't working, and then there's this loss of hope, and then we go into depression. And it's a deeper way of cutting off, just depressing our life energy because there's a sense of life's not going to work out. Those are the phases of the contraction. We've kind of pulled away from life in those different phases. Finally, what Kubler-Ross describes, if we have the blessing in our life of awareness, whether it's from spiritual practice or from whatever our karma is, there's acceptance. And what that means is that we actually pause and we notice directly without any judgment about anything, oh, it's like this. It's very courageous. It's like, okay, this is what it's like. And there's absolutely no resistance. When there's zero resistance, space opens up. When there's no resistance, it's like this, and we really feel it. We actually reconnect with a presence and a compassion and a wisdom that's our nature. Any resistance, any bargaining, any judging, any of those other phases, the clenched fist, we are divided from the essence of what we are. So this is the practice, that we begin to notice whatever the reactivity is and come back home by letting go of resistance. So let's explore it more closely, and we'll do some exercises together just to investigate. The ground of this practice, if we really want to cut through the reactive trance and come home to presence, is learning to be awake in our body and let go of the resistance in our body. Any tension in our body is a form of not allowing. Any tension is in some way our body's mode of resisting life as it is. It's a kind of some version of being at war with how it is. We're tensing against things. That doesn't mean we shouldn't do that. At times it's absolutely appropriate. Our problem, it's our habit, and it's chronic. And it's so chronic that our sense of who we are is very related to the tensing body, that we're just so familiar with it. So part of what meditation does is we begin to notice, oh, so you can close your eyes right now and go inside and just scan and sense. Don't do anything about it, but just notice. How does your body feel from the inside? Now you might be noticing not just tightening, but a lot of aches and pains, which we tense against. But just in a very simple way, the beginning of letting go is to notice. So scan. What's the life like in this body? You might sense your eyes right now and sense, is there tightness around the brow? Just to notice that and create a kind of soft attention there and see if there's a natural easing. Feel the shoulders. Can you let whatever tightness is felt there, can you just let it float a little, as if it was floating like in water? But let that be awareness. That's letting go. It's like noticing and allowing the space for unknotting. What about your hands? Can there be a soft attention there? There's a kind of unconscious tensing in the nerves of the hands and the muscles. And if we just soften a little, how much life is there that we can notice? Can you give permission to your whole body, even if it's unpleasantness in the sensations, to just relax with what's here? To let go and let go. And then even let go of the letting go. Very deep presence, just not resisting anything. Thai Buddhist teacher Ajahn Chah says, if you let go a little, you'll find a little peace. If you let go a lot, you'll find a lot of peace. If you let go absolutely, you'll find absolute peace and tranquility. So this is the ground of practice, to be awake in this body and to relax with whatever's arising, to not resist, whether it's pleasant or unpleasant, just letting this life live through you. And you might inquire, as you really sense that relaxing, that letting go, who am I when there's no resistance? What am I? What is aware? And just to feel that inquiry and then just attend from the neck down. Just feeling the aliveness and the mystery of presence, just presence. This is the grounds of letting go, the grounds of this practice of freedom, and we keep coming back to it again and again. Now, what can happen is we can start feeling our body and opening and trying to relax with what's there, and there might be some really strong unpleasant sensations, physical pain. How many of you noticed when you tried to relax that you really got in touch with physical unpleasantness? Can you just... Yeah, a lot of us. That's like almost a half. And so then what we might notice is that there's a reaction not just to the physical unpleasantness, but there's some fear about it. That we might feel physical unpleasantness and then our minds go, oh, something's wrong with my back. Or, oh, I don't know if I can keep sitting here all night. Or it might be, you know, if we get in touch with a kind of queasiness of, oh, I think I have irritable bowel. This is just coming back over and over. You know, it's, but there's always, but the older we get, and here's the, this is the real thing. The older we get, the more quickly physical pain translates into our awareness of mortality. Very quickly, it trips off into the disease we either know we have or we might have. It just does. I speak from experience. So what we're dealing with then, what we're learning to let go into and not resist, is not just physical unpleasantness, it's fear. how not to resist the fear. Fear comes up, how do you open to that, not resist it? That's a lot of the practice. So we are now moving from purely relaxing and opening and letting go into the just letting these sensations live through us to how do we let the currents of fear live through us without resisting? Are the deep grief, are the anger that comes up? And the basic teaching is whatever it is, whether it's physical unpleasantness or emotional, we start right there, real clean. Oh, this is the place to let go of resistance with this. There's an interesting phenomenon. When it's fear, I can speak for myself, and it comes up, even when I say, okay, I'm going to accept this, and I use the language of, okay, just say yes to this, or this too, I mentioned that tonight. In some way, giving it space, kindness, there's still an undercurrent inside that thinks it shouldn't be happening. There's something wrong that this fear is here. So on some level, there's still bargaining mind. Okay, I'll be with it so it goes away, you know. And that is just to notice that. I'm bringing it up so you're aware of that, because that's natural. That just, again, those stages that Elizabeth Kubler-Ross gave, that bargaining is natural. But ultimately, we can see it clearly enough so we can very, very profoundly say, yes. You know, she puts it, she says, you're not okay, and I'm not okay, and it's okay, you know. And that's what we're actually communicating to, whether it's physical discomfort or emotional pain, that it feels not okay, but it's really, really okay. It might not be okay to the small self, but awareness, our presence, is okay with it. If you really check out in any moment, there might be a reactivity what's going on, but awareness is okay with what's going on. Awareness simply recognizes and has space for whatever arises. And in the moments that we truly let go of resistance, and this is the key, we re-inhabit the awareness that is what we are. When the resistance is gone, we come back home to our wholeness. Awareness is okay with all this stuff. It really is okay. So that's kind of where we're going. And the practice here, and this is really, I find, probably what most of us, if we're really wanting to wake up or spending time with, is when there's emotional reactivity, there's all these thoughts saying this shouldn't be happening, and I don't like this, and I don't want that, and I want this, and I'm bad, and we say, oh, thinking. And then we gently open up into the aliveness in the body where there's clutch maybe in the heart, our tightness in the throat, or a fist in the belly, and we breathe with that, and we really, truly have that intention of not resisting. It's okay. I've shared here one of the breakthrough experiences for me at an early retreat when one teacher said, the boundary to what you accept is the boundary to your freedom. And so it can't be a bargaining acceptance. It can't be an acceptance that has an edge of it shouldn't be here or I'm bad. It's radical. Cuts through all that. Complete non-resistance. Now, I'll tell you a story. And that this is a man that I worked with several years ago in interviews told me about how a meditation student actually came to classes here, told me about how when his son was 16, he borrowed the car, the family car, and promised to return it by midnight, return home by midnight, and midnight came and went. And this guy was just home waiting and waiting. How many of you are parents that have had that happen? A number of us, yeah. He just got more and more agitated, and, you know, had his son been drinking? You know, that's not a far-fetched idea. you know, had he gotten into an accident. So 12:30, and he's trying his son's cell phone and not getting through, and trying and not getting through. Absolutely in a rage. Absolutely, you know, because he had promised. How many of you had that happen when your child's promised something? So, and then he remembered some of the instructions, just what we're talking about tonight. And so he was desperate to ease this agitation, and he said, okay, pausing, and began with that question we asked, like, what is really happening inside me? You know, rage and anger. He could feel the heat and the pressure in his chest. And just noticing that, okay, anger. And then under the anger, you know, as he stayed with it and just really made room for it, because it was huge, there was just a tremendous clutch of fear, right? Fear. So then that became his practice. His mind was racing with all the things that could have gone wrong, having really very vivid visuals. And he kept saying, okay, thinking, feeling the fear in his body, breathing with it, and saying yes. I often teach putting hand on your heart. He was saying yes, but he was putting his hand on his heart to really make room for it. It was like a crushing weight. And as he really leaned in, and we talk about leaning in, that a way of not resisting something is to really sense you're sitting down in it. Absolutely surrendering to open to it. When he really opened to it, underneath the fear was this huge sense of grief and cherishing, like the sense of how he'd feel with the loss and how much he cherished this life. Breathing with it, opening to it. And again, so that, start where you are. Being with that, sensing the enormity of cherishing. And that's how he remained until, I think he said it was a little before one, when he heard the car in the driveway, and his son kind of launched into the living room and embarked on his defense. You know, started explaining himself. He had run out of time, and the cell phone had run out of batteries and whatever juice. And so this guy didn't react. He just listened quietly. But then, as he told me, he had tears in his eyes, and he said, this is what he told me, he said, this last hour was one of the worst I've gone through ever in my life. And then he said, I love you, and then his voice broke, and then he was quiet, and then he said, I was afraid something terrible had happened. Please, Josh, don't do this again. And his son's armor, all the defenses just melted. And because his father was, the level of presence and sincerity kind of cut through any reactive dance they were going to have. And he described the kind of communication that's the way we wish it would be in our lives. And I got reminded of this story because a friend on the Monday night class told a similar story about an interaction with his son, where in a similar way he had paused, and rather than resisting what was going on inside him, had that same kind of presence that allowed him to come home. And I've had it in my life with my son and in others. I share this because this practice of not resisting, of radical acceptance, of really opening, is not a practice of passivity. It's not like we're surrendering to what is and then we're just becoming doormats. It actually allows us to connect with the presence that lets us act in a way in this world that's imbued with wisdom, that's intelligent, that's kind, and where intimacy is possible. Let's practice a little bit this next piece of really what it means to not resist with difficulty. And if your body's uncomfortable, take 20 seconds to stand up or move, because I know what it's like to be sitting here a lot, and I'd like to be sensitive to these bodies. And if any of you are new, while we're doing this, I'll just give a little station identification break. You might want to experiment with bringing blankets or cushions for these chairs, because they are not comfortable chairs. And there's enough discomfort in the process to not add on. Okay, so when you're ready. And these are just brief exercises, just to give you a taste. And mostly so you can really practice on your own. So just to pause enough and come into stillness so you can feel here-ness, feel yourself here. And let the breath be conscious, relax with the breath. And bring to mind, if you will, any situation in your life that's asking for your attention, where you feel like in some way you're in that reactivity, that kind of tight fist where you either get caught in blaming or anger, or you disconnect, where there's not so much presence. And go to, as if you were watching it on a movie, go to the place in it, in that situation where it's most provocative to you, where it most is difficult. And notice what's the worst part about this, what it is you're afraid of or angry about, hurt by. Sensing your habitual way of reacting, what goes on in your mind, what are you believing? What are you believing about yourself or about the other, if there's someone else? If there's blaming, what the judgment is. And you might even exaggerate it and feel how your body is when you're reacting. When you're in that anger or hurt, fear, sensing the worst case scenario around the corner, what's really bothering you? So you're just familiar that this is the fist. This is when the body of fear, as they call it, the tightening of your body and mind, where the self gets very solid. This is when there's a saying no to experience. No, this isn't the way I want things. It's a fundamental being at war with how it is. So just to be familiar with this. Sense who you experience yourself to be when you're in this reaction. What kind of person, and do you like that person? And then to begin to explore, what would it mean? What would it really mean to stop the war? To let go of the thoughts and beliefs that are agitating, and to really open to just the experience in your body. Just to start breathing with where the rawness is or the vulnerability in your heart. Just notice what happens if you just feel your body, feel your heart. And you might even mentally whisper yes to whatever feels difficult. Just this kind of way of sending a message, okay, I'm going to be with this. And if it helps to put your hand on your heart, just to offer presence. This is the allowing presence. there's a quality of kindness and a deep sense of not resisting. Can you relax in your body and just breathe with what's here? Not pushing it away at all. You might sense the not okay feelings and in some deep way say, it's okay, it's okay. Really offering kindness if it's difficult. There's a poem by Dorothy Hunt that I read a lot called To Love What Is. In this choiceless, never-ending flow of life, there is an infinite array of choices. One alone brings happiness, to love what is. So I'd like to take a few minutes. We're going to end a little bit early tonight, but I'd like to take a few minutes to open it to any questions or comments you might have on how we really stop resisting things. And just to let you know that next week we'll be doing part two of this. Of this exploration and really working with the beliefs that we get hooked on. How do you let go of beliefs that are core beliefs of not okayness? But I realized that I was going to pack in too much tonight, so I'm going to do that next week. But is there anyone that has any questions or comments tonight on what we've been exploring? Yeah, please.
I think I've understood what radical self-acceptance means and what would be the right way to say it. It's what the Germans for.
The sharing is, this is the first time tonight that this gentleman had a real sense of what the actual meaning of radical self-acceptance is and where the journey takes us. And I'm glad you said that, because there are in this practice we do really these two qualities of noticing and profound allowing. And if there's anything less than the profound allowing, it reconstitutes a sense of a self and something's wrong. So the only way to wake up out of that small self story is this absolute unconditional, okay, I'll be with this. Yeah, so thank you. Yeah. Anyone else? Yeah, please.
I have a rather vivid experience in the last exercise. I have a rather vivid remembrance of a very unpleasant interaction I had with my coworkers. And the real feeling I felt was a sense of tremendous anger flowing from her to me. And I just feel this anger, and I feel this really very deep and unpleasant feeling about this person. And it's not even a particular person who's been angry for years. And so it's a feeling of, the sense was, what do I do about the fact that I'm going to have to fly off?
You felt anger coming from her or towards
it? It's over just sort of flowing my dream. It was kind of like, it felt as if she was very angry or frustrated, and somehow every interaction with her sort of just kind of
right.
Invades.
So the sharing in question that I'm hearing in this is that if we have situations in our life and then we're meditating and get in touch with how we feel someone is perceiving us and angry at us, and then just the reaction we're having in it, and then how do we move from that to actually being in direct relationship with someone? And there's not a formula, but there is a basic principle, which is that I find always is true, which is you can't always catch things when you're in the midst of the day. You do the best you can. You can't always do long pauses and have that unraveling from anger to fear to grief. That doesn't happen. But you can take time on the side to really be with and examine and open to. And if you feel anger coming from somebody in a meditation, see if you can move from that to the actual experience in your body of what that's like. Like, kind of put down the story of person out there and self here, and what's it like? And usually there's a feeling of fear of somebody's anger. Then we start right where we are with that. And if you, in your practice, can begin to find a space for that fear where you actually sense it there and breathe with it and open to it till you finally get to that you're the space and the fear is a current in that space. You know the saying that if you trust you're the ocean, you're not afraid of the waves. If you can really be with the fear, you'll reestablish that presence that's who you are, and there's room for it. That will inform you on how you move forward in relating with this person, because you'll have more space. You'll be, here's the bottom line, you'll be remembering more who you really are. So rather than being the small self that's afraid of and reacting to her anger, you're that quality of presence that has sorrow for it, or feel, can sense the fear about it, but you're not identified in that. Yeah, thank you. Because the truth is that these practices are not meant for just off in a cave. I mean, the more we come to presence with what's difficult within ourselves, the more we can respond, be responsible in our world with a genuine compassion and freedom. So thank you. Yeah. Was there anything else?
So I guess ultimately it's the ability to accept anything to its worst degree.
The question is, so ultimately it's the ability to accept anything to its worst degree. And yes, it's basically learning to accept death. Because what's our alternative? I mean, I say that playfully, but, you know, the reality is that if we're identified as a small self, this organism's going to always be defending against what's around the corner, which is death. If we sense our identity as kind of this awareness, this timelessness, this heart, these bodies come and go and there's grief, but there's not a continual tensing against what's around the corner. And the irony is our way of defending against death is the one thing that takes away our life. So yes, it's accepting the whole deal. Radical. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, please.
I like the thing you said about the presence and non-reactivity not being about passivity. And the story about the father, because I think there's something that it actually allows you to confront situations that you might otherwise avoid fear of reacting and burning a bridge or doing some damage. So.
Yeah, so what Anne's saying is that not only is it not about passivity, our nature has activity to it, and it lets it be enlightened activity so that we don't hold back when we need to deal with things. And so that our activism, if we're politically active, if that's our inclination, we actually, because there's that presence, we're actually available to feel the real suffering that's not just in our own circle, but in widening circles, and engage and respond to care authentically, not hypothetically. Yeah, thank you. So, anyone else? I'm kind of scanning the balcony.
Can I say something else?
Yeah, please.
What this reminds me of several things. I think the nicest thing that came about is Ronnie. The
there must be a lot of problems. I don't know if anybody's ever got sort of mystical about the whole part of running, but if when you're running, I mean, this clenching of the hand is exactly, but it's not. But there's a to me, there's a better thing to think about, and that's when you're running, and you suddenly feel the tension in your shoulders, or there's something else going on. It's sort of like reminds me also of yoga. The only thing that's going on when you're running is your legs are moving. Your mind doesn't need to go crazy. Your shoulders don't need to be hurting. All these other things don't need to be happening. The only thing that's really happening is if you come out of that little core sense of reality, and, you know, where everything else, the only thing really happening is you're running. Your legs are moving. And I think that's where you're going. You're sort of separated out so that now I'm doing moving my legs. Now I'm sitting. Or now I'm thinking about something. But we layer everything a million times over, so we don't really know what we're doing.
Yeah. So
muddy waters.
Muddy waters, yeah. I mean, that's one of the descriptions in Tibetan teachings, that it's a confusion, and it's because rather than just this, whatever you're doing, do it wholeheartedly. This, be aware of what's right here. And when you're aware of what's right here, you tense the muscles that need to be tensed, but there's not an automatic busyness of the mind, and you're not in the trance. You're here just reading the paper or just walking on the street or running. So let me just check my watch. Yeah, we have time for a couple more. Yeah, please. Speak loud, as loud as you can, so we can. Well, let's start with that. This is if there's doing and there's being, where do you draw the line? Because you have to be doing. And they're an artificial division. I mean, I can be doing right now and looking at you and speaking and still very established in a quality of presence. You can act from presence. So activity itself and doing itself is not a problem. You can do enlightened doing. You can be awake. The challenge is that so much of our doing is habitual, is overdone, it's driven by fear, it's driven by craving, and we lose sight of wholeness. We become, as described with the running, we become kind of tight and in a trance. So really, so much of what we're learning is not the meditation on a cushion, but it's a quality of being awake and relaxed and wholehearted in just whatever different activity we're in. Whether it's silence, stillness, activity, or the activity of us being with each other. Yeah, thank you. Do you remember part two? The question is, if you peel the layers of the onion, what's at the bottom in terms of emotions? And there's different ways of describing it. My experience is of a kind of a fear, a kind of an organismic fear of an organism that's trying to live and not die, and it's tensed about the inevitability of dying, and that the different kinds of fears we have are all some derivative of that. But other people have a little different way of describing it, so I would let that be more of a koan to investigate, because the reality is that our freedom comes at going to the very core and just complete openness with what's there. So I love that you're asking the question. Yeah, yeah. Okay, one more, because your hand just shot up so energetically. If you got really good at this, would you then never really want anything or care about or reach out or be afraid? If that was true, we'd all say, thank you, but no thank you, I'm out of here. You don't lose your passion. you don't lose your love for life or love for other people, nor do you lose your fear. Fear is built into these bodies. Fear and all the other emotional weather systems keep coming. But there is something that changes. What changes is your sense of who you are. So fear will arise, but there's not so much of a sense of I own this fear or I'm the fearful self. There's more of a sense of this space of awareness that fear is happening in. And in that way, it becomes unpleasant, but it's not suffering. This is a path of freedom from suffering. And the suffering is we forget who we are. Awareness contracts to think we're a small self oppressed by the fear or needing to have. And when we wake up, there's awareness, and there might be still a want for this and a fear of that, but our identity is not hitched to it. We remember wholeness. We're not in the trance. So that's a good place to end, I think. And thank you.
The teaching you have received has been freely offered. If you would like to contact the Insight Meditation Community of Washington to make a donation or to learn more about our programs, please visit our website at www.imcw.org.